Hello and welcome everybody to the Formula of Film.
Blah.
That was my best interpretation of
that was Dracula.
Of
huh?
Dracula, yeah, that was
pretty good.
I want to suck your blood.
Yeah, that's good.
This is the Halloween episode. So if you didn't notice by that awful impression,
mm-hmm.
Yep. So we're gonna be talking about I wouldn't say a very scary show. It wasn't very scary to me, but
no, it wasn't scary at all. I don't think, my opinion.
Yeah, we're gonna be talking about The Haunting of Bly Manor, which is a new show on Netflix. It's a part of an anthology series, I think. Season 2-ish of Hill House. Or you could just say it's its own thing made by similar people with similar actors.
Yeah. With the same creator.
Yeah. Mike it doesn't Flanagan. Have an overarching name unless they start just calling every single series
the haunting maybe the haunting of
yeah,
series.
The haunting of series.
That's what it could be, because I think they already greenlit a third one.
And it's probably going to be called The Haunting of Something.
Yeah, something, I'd imagine. That's probably... Because I know that this was super successful when they released it. Like,
well, everybody loved Hill House.
Everybody loved Hill House, but I think this was even more successful than Hill House when it was initially released. So,
well,
but that's probably why.
Because Hill House is so good. Because
yeah.
So many people like fell into Hill House and was like, they realized it was a good show that they were like, I better watch Bly Manor too, because I know it's like the second iteration.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, it's ridiculous. I spoken to a few people who just say like they think it's going to be an extension of Hill House, even though clearly it wasn't supposed to be an extension of Hill House. But I know a few people who went into it going, yeah, isn't this the sequel to Hill House? No, it's not the sequel to Hill House. And I'm actually glad it isn't the sequel to Hill House, because Hill House ended very nicely, and I actually don't want to see any more of that.
Yeah.
I thought they did a great job with it, so I'm glad they ended it where they did.
No, I like these anthology series because they do, just like Fargo, you know, they end, and they don't, like, have to overblow anything or like keep things going that, you know, don't need to be going for as long as they are and stuff like that. Like, you can just kind of put a nice ribbon on it and end it each time. I mean, what's the other one? American Horror Story is a similar.
Yeah, that's another anthology.
I've watched the first two seasons and it's not bad, but I mean, I like that. I like when creators do that, when
same
just don't go too far with something, because it's like, you know, you get even really great shows start to lose something if they keep going for too long, you know.
Oh yeah it's hard to keep a flame alive with, or a formula in fact alive,
mm-hmm.
on a show, because a lot of shows have some sort of formula that they're following, and it just kind of gets old.
Yeah.
And the characters kind of get old, usually, just because you're following like the pretty much the lives and the changes of a character. And in my opinion, a character can only change so much before it's just like things start to either become dull or unbelievable, or they've already transformed, and it's like, okay, what now? What are they gonna do?
It's the Game of Thrones effect, you know, where it's like you keep going and going and going, and they did try to keep like growing these characters, and I think it came to the point where it's like you can't even grow these characters anymore,
right?
Because a lot of them have changed so much that toward the, and then it becomes shit because you can't change anything,
right?
And so it's then like, you do things that you wouldn't, you know, they do things that people wouldn't think they would do because they've already grown their character so much, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Plus, you're more ending up with a long epilogue at that point. But
yeah.
Which is epilogues tend to be boring in and of themselves.
Yeah, so. Totally.
But today we're going to be talking specifically about ghosts, because in my opinion, and I think Steve's as well, this particular series really used ghosts well in general. Like they used the idea of ghosts and the theme of ghosts really well. They weren't just like a side note. They were the entire story was about ghosts. Where in Hill House, I feel like the characters were more of the forefront, like the people being haunted were the forefront, but in this it was the ghosts that were more of the forefront. Yeah, there were a couple people who were living who had a prominent role, main character type role, but mostly it was about the ghosts and their story, which to me made for a pretty interesting story that they did this time.
I wouldn't necessarily say it's like more about the ghosts, but the ghosts play a way bigger role.
That's
than in,
true.
Than in The Haunting of Hill House. Like in The Haunting of Hill House.
Are there ghosts even?
Yeah, there are.
I couldn't remember if there were actual ghosts.
The ghost of Nell.
Oh, yeah. She was the only one.
She's haunting. Then there's the people in Hill House. There's like the guy with the top, the hat, the old grandmother, the crazy lady.
Oh, yeah, They just don't really have any story with the exception of Nell.
Yeah, they don't have the backstory for them. Where in this, they're building a backstory for ghosts.
Right. So one thing I want to mention before we start is, first of all, who is this made by?
It's created by Mike Flanagan. And like we said, he created Hill House, Haunting of Hill House. And he did employ some of the same actors, like Victoria Pedretti.
She's the main character.
She's the main Danielle. Character. Yep. And she was also in Haunting of Hill House. And then there's Oliver Jackson Cohen, who plays Peter, and he was Luke in Hill House. Let's see, who's another similar? Henry Thomas.
Yeah.
He played the dad and the young version of the dad in The Haunting of Hill House. And then there's Carlo Gugino. Yeah, and he plays the uncle in Bly Manor. And then there's Carlo Gugino, who's the storyteller in Bly Manor, and she's the mother in The Haunting of Hill House. And then there's one more.
The girl with the gloves.
Fiodora.
Yeah, she played Viola. Here. She plays
one of the ghosts, and she's also married to Mike Flanagan. So.
Oh, she is. Okay.
Yeah. I think, yeah. I don't know if they were married before Hill House. Maybe that's how they met. They did. He did, another movie with her before that called Hush.
Oh yeah. I just watched
it. We watched that. Yeah that's Mike. Did. Mike Flanagan made that. So I'm assuming that that's how they met. So they employ. So there's a lot of similar people in it. It gives you nostalgia for Hill House, I think, and I like that they did that. So it connects them without completely like connecting stories.
Yeah, I like that idea when they do that with anthology series. Like, Fargo doesn't do that at all, but I think that that's fine for Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this, like, American Horror Story definitely does it, where they just bring similar actors back, and they play a prominent role pretty much every season. And I like that. I think it's cool. Gives you, like you said, some nostalgia, some connection with the previous series. And I just like the idea overall. So...
Yeah, I think the acting is really good.
Phenomenal. Yeah, I think they do a really good job, all around, like the videography or whatever, cinematography is really, really impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well. I mean, we did an episode on Haunting of Hill House at how good the cinematography was.
Yeah, know? Hill House, in my opinion, was a bit better.
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that.
But this was still very good. Yeah. I think they were trying to tell two different, very different stories. So,
mm-hmm. So they did it differently.
You have to do a different effect.
Yeah.
But what many people may not have known when they were watching this, or maybe many people did, is that this is actually based off of a book, well, a collection of stories. The main book being a novella, which is like 100 pages or something.
Yeah, it's like 115 pages or so.
Called The Taming of the Shrew.
Yes. The Taming of the Shrew. No, The Turn of the Screw.
Yeah. So we made that flub up in a previous episode.
Yeah, I did that.
So we had to call back to it. But yeah, that was by Henry James. And it's just a really short story. If you have ever read the book, you'll notice that pretty much all of the characters' names were pulled from that particular story, or at least the characters that are in there. There are representations of those characters mm-hmm. in The Haunting.
Yeah, you have Peter, Miss Jessel, Mrs. Gross,
Flora, Danny, and Miles.
Flora and Miles.
And then you have the unnamed uncle.
And then there's the unnamed uncle. And I think they named him Henry after Henry James.
Yep. And they actually gave his last name Wingrave because there's a story by Henry James called Owen Wingrave.
Hmm.
So
isn't there a character named Owen? Oh yeah, there's Owen, yeah.
There's Owen as well, yeah. So they took a lot of the names and stuff straight from the Henry James books. And actually, another interesting thing I found was that each of the episodes are named after one of the ghost stories of Henry James. And actually, one of the episodes, it's called the Romance of Certain Old Clothes. It's a story by Henry James, and it's pretty much. The whole episode is a retelling of that particular story. So it's the one that flashes back to Viola. That whole story is that story, which they did just a really good job of blending different stories by Henry James and putting them together to make this. Because if you read about all those little stories, there's like just small pieces that they took from.
Yeah.
And to put them together and make a coherent story and go deeper in it is pretty creative in my opinion. Yeah,
and you know what kind of annoys me? Because I went back and read some reviews on Bly Manor, and there's a lot of people, a lot of reviewers are just focusing that it's based off of Turn of the Screw and not saying that there was any other, like, Henry James stories. So a lot of the reviews are like that, oh, they did too much with the Turn of the Screw. And it's like, no, dude, they were trying to make, it's based off of the house in Turn of the Screw and some of the characters, but no, he's trying to employ a bunch of different stories into one story.
Which I think is a very powerful and creative thing to do. Mm-hmm. And also to give a pretty interesting explanation of a lot of the things that happened in Turn of the Screw, because if you read about Turn of the Screw, it's a pretty simplistic story. It's nothing to what there are definitely similarities, but the way it ends it's almost pretty much what the third episode or fourth episode of this series is, where she kind of sees Peter Quint through the window, and that's mm-hmm. the end. there's no like explanation of anything. That's the end of the Turn of the Screw. So anyone who says that it's a direct pull from Turn of the Screw obviously didn't read Turn of the Screw. So
that's true.
Miles dies. I didn't read it. I just read the plot. Steve actually read it, so he knows a little bit more.
There are a lot of, like Kevin said, it would be four episodes if it was fully based off Turn of the Screw. I mean, it could be two episodes if it was right. fully based off Turn of the Screw, because really in that whole story, nothing happens at all. It's all just, I don't even know what the time period that it takes place over, but it's mostly just in the governess's mind, who is Danny, and she's projecting ghosts onto these kids, and no one sees a ghost but her. So it's more, I think, we'll talk about it, but there are similar things to, like, the idea behind Turn of the Screw and the idea of the ghosts in this story.
Yeah, so let's first start talking about kind of the different ghosts in this, because I think talking about the different ghosts kind of tells the story itself. Mm-hmm. So the two main ghosts that are seen throughout, unless you count the more evil ghost, I'd say the two main ghosts are Miss Jessel and Peter Quinn.
There's actually three.
Oh yes, there that is are
ghosts
one.
The whole
yes.
time.
Yeah, yeah, there is. Which the third one,
which
is
the third
is
one, is
really
is,
remarkable.
Is a surprise.
Yeah, so we'll start off with the love couple, the romantic couple, which is Miss Jessel and Peter Quint. And Miss Jessel was like the au pair before Danny. And she was taking care of the kids. She's kind of like an au pair to me, I guess it's like a nanny. And she was taking care of the kids, teaching them. And Peter Quint is like the assistant to the uncle.
To the uncle. He's like the utility man. He's like, hey, he's the dude who does like the odd jobs. Like if they need someone to do something that, you know, like, because everybody else has their own other job, where this guy's like, hey, you need to do this and this and this.
Right.
Okay, I'll go do it, I guess.
Yeah, I never really knew what his actual role was.
I think
you're
he's
right.
kind of
I
the
think
assistant.
A utility man.
Yeah, he's kind
right.
like, I think that they, I think Owen said he was like just the driver.
Yeah,
at one point.
That's what I thought he was too. Because
like
he,
at
like,
the beginning, I think,
but then he was doing like accounting at one point.
Yeah, he's doing like he's getting his hand in different things with the uncle.
Yeah, which you find out why he's more of a nefarious type. Peter Quint is
kind of a piece of shit.
But
they build his character well.
Understand
maybe why he's a piece of shit a little bit, you know.
To preface everything, I wouldn't say anyone in this story is truly evil. I think they all have good in them.
I would agree with that. Actually.
Mostly, I'd say Miss Jessel probably is the most. Miss Jessel and Mrs. Gross, which is the surprising ghost. It are the nicest ghosts, right? They're they have really no evil at all in them. And then you've got the Viola and then Peter Quint, who are kind of asshole ghosts, but they have reasons. So mm-hmm. So it details this love story of Miss Jessel and Peter Quint coming together. And the way they tell the story, I think, is pretty interesting. It definitely puts Peter out to be kind of an asshole, someone you don't really like. And he just wins the heart of Miss Jessel. But then he vanishes, and they say he steals a bunch of money from everyone, and then I guess Miss Jessel, they think she's become so distraught that she kills herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Peter Quint left, she can't believe that he left her, and just stole all that money and vanishes. But really what happened is Peter Quint died, was killed by Viola, strangled to death by the ghost of Viola, and Miss Jessel, I think, was pulled in by Viola.
No,
I forget.
So
I missed
what
that.
Happened was Peter took control of her and killed her. He went down into the water and drowned her in the water as her, because he believed that oh, if she died, her soul would stay there, and he had the plot. He had already came up with the plan because he figured out that he could get inside someone else's body once right. he accidentally touched her at one point. And so his plan was for them to both be dead, and now they can take over Miles and Flora's bodies and live through these kids.
Right. Which I think was a really cool idea for this, was how they possess. But yeah, how they possess was is like a really interesting thing. They like kind of just touch the kid, not inappropriately, but like touch them on like the shoulder or whatever, and then they put the kid back into their own memories, right? They shove them into like the kid's memory,
their own, like back into their brain somewhere.
Yeah, they hide them into like a memory,
happy memories,
right? And then that's their way of taking over, but they can't fully take over, it seems, unless the child allows them to, says these like magic words that just allows them to take over fully. So yeah, what Steve said, Peter Quint's whole deal, he's one of the main ghosts doing the hauntings, is he wants to possess Miles, and he wants Miss Jessel's ghost to possess Flora so they can actually leave the manor and never come back, and live happily ever after. And that was another thing that I thought was pretty interesting, was as with a lot of ghost tropes, they can't actually leave where they died. But in this, they could leave where they died if you possess someone and took them out of there, which was really interesting plan from Peter Quint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting plan. And also, just to go off of the memories, the ghosts also live in past memories as well, which is really interesting thing. Because right. it, like, I like that play too, because... And that was a huge one with Mrs. Gross.
Right, and I want to talk about her a little bit separate, because she,
yeah,
to her, me, hers has is very like a very specific, intricate story, which I like a lot.
Very, her story was really interesting. Like, when I saw her story, I was like, damn, that was just blown fucking away. Awesome.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and I just like this, like, play on memory, because there's the idea that ghosts are just a memory that are like inhabiting a place, you know? So,
right.
I like that they tied in that idea that these ghosts, although they're haunting this area, they still go away and are in another memory. Like Peter right. Peter Quint like lives the worst memory of his life, where he yeah. like has to see his mom over and over again, who's like, obviously his mom doesn't really like care for him. She's only coming to him for like, cause she needs something. And it's like the worst, he hates it so much because he's not like, you know, he must've just been mistreated by his parents. And now his mom has to see her face every day when he's like despises her.
Yeah. I'd like to understand why they actually visit those memories. To me, the reason why they visit those memories is because that is their greatest mistake in life.
It could be. Yeah, that could be the idea too.
So I think that... so let's talk about these memories real quick. Because I like you, I really liked the idea of the ghosts having to relive their memories over and over again, which almost to me feels like this whole idea of unfinished business, which is a big thing with ghost
that, yeah.
tropes, I guess. Mm-hmm. But this, like we said before, this particular story that they tell uses a bunch of different pieces of ghost stories and different ghost tropes, which I think is just done very well. And this is one of them, which is the idea of like unfinished business or memories. Or living in a memory. So I think with Peter Quint, his biggest mistake is actually doing what his mom was asking him to do, which was steal all this money.
Right? Yeah.
That's what she asked him to do, and he's like, I'm going to do it. for you. And it's almost like it's trying to tell him to realize where he made a mistake. And then Miss Jessels, she's always reliving her moment where she puts on the coat of Charlotte, which is Flora and Miles's mother. She puts on that coat and falls. That's when she falls for Peter Quint. That is her mistake. That's her reason for dying. It might even be the reason for dying. Like,
that's true.
That's another thing. Like, Peter Quint, his reason for dying is because he's a freaking thief. It was the only reason he died.
If he didn't do all of that, he might have.
Right, exactly.
And that's another thing that I think this does really well, is it, like, makes you question, did anybody really even deserve to die in this? You know, like, do these people who are really just, because I think they portray them really in a really humane way. I'm not saying that that's like, it's just like puts the idea in your head of like people deserving to die and why they died in a story, like, and it makes you think.
Yeah, you know? I agree with that. Like, I would say one of the worst tropes to me about ghosts is that a person does deserve to die, and they always had their, like, comeuppance, and that's the reason mm-hmm. why they're the ghost. They're a ghost because they deserved it.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Where, you're right, I feel like these guys didn't do anything that was awful, but they also, I think they had a reason behind why they are ghosts.
I agree with you. I'm just like saying that I think that they did a good job of raising that question and making you like feel for even the characters that we were saying are like maybe like Peter Quint. I still felt bad for him, you know. Agreed. Like, there was still, they kept doing the loop of him with his mother and stuff to the point where you feel for him. You're like, fuck, man, like, that he fucked up, you know. And then same with the Miss Jessel, you're like, damn, because she keeps, you were talking about, I think it is like their biggest mistake, because it's like, no, I don't want to go back there, you know. They keep saying that, no, it's like that moment where they knew that they had a choice, and they didn't have to follow that choice.
Right.
They could have denied it, but that's where their whole life changed.
Right, and I think it's there's some sort of point to all of this, because even the uncle, he's reliving that same sort of thing too, even though he's not a ghost.
No, he just sees like the worst part of himself.
Right, and he constantly relives the moment that he fucked up. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the main themes of this and ghosts in general is letting go. Passing on, getting past whatever you're clinged on to. And these memories are what cling these people on. Onto
the manor.
Onto the manor itself, yeah. And once they start to forget, their face goes away, but the thing that's keeping them there kind of fades away. So they just kind of become, they almost just are stuck in this memory forever, because they were never able to let go. They're never able to release themselves. And I think this is a good time to move on to Mrs. Gross, because I think her big thing is never letting go.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about Mrs. Gross is that she's the only real ghost who doesn't know she's dead, right?
Yeah.
She's the only one.
She doesn't know she's dead, and she is dead the whole time.
Right. She dies
and everybody can see her.
Right before Danny gets there. And the reason people can see her is because she doesn't believe she's dead. Mm-hmm. And she's thinking up new clothes and all this stuff. She's somehow living in the real world with everybody else. Though she sometimes like vanishes And they notice her like disappear every so often, and sometimes yeah. she's kind of just like staring off and looking elsewhere.
Yeah.
But those are like subtle hints to her being a ghost, but you never fully understand till later. And I'd like to ask you, like, why do you think she is so different from the other ghosts? Why does she not understand that she is dead? I have my reason.
I'm honestly, I never really thought about that.
Like, I thought about it when I was writing it down, just because I didn't think about it either. Like, I was just like, okay, she just doesn't know that she's just having this Bruce Willis effect from Sixth Sense, and that's it. But no, I think what it is she was already so out of reality, right? She already was, she was in such severe denial of her husband leaving her. So her husband, they show you her story, and she's talking with Charlotte, who is the kid's parents, like I mentioned before. And she's saying her husband left her very unexpectedly, was cheating on her and all this stuff. And she's like, she's very unwilling to accept that fact. And I think it's her strong denial that actually is one of the prime reasons why she still thinks she's alive. She has such denial of reality, pretty much. She's not even in reality to begin with. That's why no one ever really notices that she is not there, not all there. Because even though she stares off into the distance and does these very weird things, no one notices, because that's just how she always acted, because she's not even there. She was never really there to begin with. The moment she started living in that manner, she kind of broke herself away from reality and just did the same thing every day, day in and day out, with the exception of one memory. And that was the only thing that kind of kept
where her. She kept going. Yeah. And that's when you definitely know that she's dead, because she keeps going back to that memory of Owen.
Yeah.
And so then finally she's like, I'm dead, aren't I? And he's like, yeah, you're dead.
Yeah. Which the whole reveal is very, very interesting. How they do that. But yeah, the reason I think that is because of her denial. And also, there's one other reason I think that she keeps going. It's because of Owen himself.
Mm-hmm.
She has a strong love for Owen, and that love keeps her wanting to look different every day, almost posing for him that I'm still alive, to keep him going, because he's also struggling with death and dementia and stuff, and like his mom's dementia. So I think those are the reasons why she is kept on so long.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense with the type of character that she is. She seems like, and I think even Peter Quint like kind of calls her out on it, and like basically says she's like obsessed with things, like she's obsessive about like the house and everything around it and all of that. So her like obsession with the manor would keep her in the loop with at the manor, and making her believe that she is still alive.
Right. Plus her best memory was the manor itself. So maybe that's one of the reasons too.
The moments that she spent with the family and Owen, and that was her best life.
Right. So that might have been another reason. Though one line I really liked was the comparison of her with Wile E. Coyote and just kind of running off the cliff that Miles says. He says, you're like Wile E. Coyote. You just keep going. You're running off the cliff, but you never looked down. You never, you don't fall off the cliff until you look down.
Yeah, she's not like, she's got like a blinder on.
Right.
She's got, she knows what she wants to do, and that's what she does. She's not like observing everything else around her.
Right.
Which is the, which he says, because she's, all she has to do is look down in the well and she'll see that she, her body's down there.
Right, which,
because, well, Peter Quint actually kills her as Miles.
Right.
He pushes her down.
So that whole exchange was really interesting, but I thought her character was a very good character.
Yeah, Mrs. Gross is a great character. All the characters are good. But yeah, she's really, her character was just really good. And that, like, those two episodes where they kind of focus on her were, I think, my favorites.
I would agree.
And I liked the broken brick, you know, the cracked brick that she always saw, which signified she cracked her head. And there's also a brick that's cracked in the well, I think, that is,
yeah,
that her face was aimed at. So she keeps seeing that brick, which is just a really attention to detail. It's just a really good little thing to add into a show. Like, just a thing. Because it happens throughout. They just don't focus on it too much. So you're like, oh, I wonder why she saw that. You're not thinking, oh, she's dead. You know, right. You're just wondering why she's seeing that, because she's seems to be flighty and lost. She's ghost-like and lost in another memory, but you're not putting two and two together, which I think they did a really good job of hiding it, like, but also giving you clues that she is a ghost.
They did, yeah. And I think one of the other points is some people get too caught up in their memories to begin with. She almost was like a person with dementia, as, like, there was a lot of comparison, I think, with dementia itself. Mm-hmm. Because of Owen's mother having dementia and him being able to deal with dementia patients, she almost was like she had dementia herself, because she just was hopping to different past memories. That's what a dementia person does, is they almost have the same effect that all these ghosts are experiencing. They just hop back to different memories. Which I think that comparison was pretty interesting. What they did.
Yeah. And most ghosts are based off, there's another ghost that Danny sees, which is her fiance, who she sees, and he's more of her memory and her, right, like, big, like, that's a moment where she believes, like, she holds herself accountable for his death, because she reveals to him that she is a lesbian. And that she really doesn't, she loves him, but she doesn't, can't love him that way. And then he steps out of the car, and if he's angry, and then he gets hit by a truck.
Yeah.
And she see the last image of him is she sees the truck's headlights in his glasses in the mirror. Right. So she always sees him whenever she looks in a mirror, she sees her fiance.
Right.
Yeah.
So, which is another play on memory, but a different way. Like, I don't think he was an actual ghost. He wasn't anything to do with Bly Manor or anything like that.
No.
It was just more of a play on memory there. Something haunting her specifically.
Yeah. Yeah, and just like with the uncle, you know, his memory of the worst person that he ever was haunts him. And it brings him back to, like, the worst moment of his life all the time. But he sees this, like, asshole person of himself who's, like, has this, like, ridiculous shit-eating grin on, and, like, he's definitely a creepy dude. And I like that they did that. I like those, like, they're not ghosts, but
they're haunting.
They're haunting because they're things that are real for people. Like, that's like a thing that you, like, you're most likely not going to see yourself that way, but you're going to think of yourself that way at times. Like, if you did something that you despise, you're always going to be thinking about that.
Right.
And like you said, it's like the only way that you can move forward is by letting it go. And he both Danny and Henry can't let these things in their lives go.
It's true.
They're just like following them around everywhere they go.
Yeah, so
and that's why he won't go back to the manor, because he's like just sees this terrible human of who he is, and he can't bring himself to go back there.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, it is another interesting comparison between ghosts, is that these particular characters are like ghosts in themselves because they can't let things go.
Mm-hmm.
And they're almost a shell of themselves. Both of them are. Because obviously Henry, he almost can't even leave his own office. Like, he's just constantly drunk. She is just like, she had to run away. She's practically running away from everything. So they're both shells of themselves. So they're almost mm-hmm. like ghosts.
Yeah, and you can see, like, as it goes on, like, you can see both of these characters change. Like, right. Danny's character changes drastically. Like, in the beginning, she's kind of, there's like something about her that, like, you know, she's good, but there's something about her, for me, that I didn't really like. But as the show grew on, I started to like her more and more. And I think it was because she was realizing, like, who she was, you know, and discovering who she was and what the demons that she needed to, like, let go in her life. So she was becoming better for it. So her character was developing over the time. And same with the uncle, like, you're just like, what the fuck is up with this guy?
Yeah,
you know, and then at the end, you come to like him. You come to, like, you don't like what he did, but you come to like him as a person. You know, like, he made a mistake, he fucked up, but he's not a bad guy.
Yeah.
And they just did a good job with developing all the characters, really. Like, they just did a great job with it.
They did. Like, I would say Danny was my least favorite character, to be honest. Even in the end, I didn't really care for her. But I did think her love story was interesting, though, still. So her flashback with her ex-husband was also very interesting. One interesting fact, which would have made this show drastically different, I think, was that the guy who plays Peter Quint was originally going to be the gardener. So he was going to be the love interest of Danny. But they ended up changing it to a woman. And one of the reasons they changed it is because they thought people would be kind of weirded out that Nell
and Luke
and Luke were getting together. They were twins in the one show.
Yeah.
Now they're actually lovers in the next.
I can understand that.
So they were just like, let's not do that. So they chose a different approach, which I think changed things pretty drastically, especially because it gave her more of a good reason for leaving her ex-husband. It made that actually that detail about her life pretty interesting, and didn't make her seem like a terrible person. Like, if she just left him because, oh, I just don't love you and that's it, it would have been made her look a lot worse.
Yeah.
And in this case, she's more of like an innocent victim.
Yeah, and it takes place in the 80s, so like it still wasn't really accepted, you know. Right. So I'm sure like she's discovering who she is, and she loved that guy. You know, but she just realized that she couldn't go on further, like, with a physical relationship with this person. Right. Because she wasn't attracted in that way. So, I think it just added a depth in the show that was good. And it also, like, with the gardener character, you know, I don't know how they would have played that, because the gardener is actually the person who's telling the story.
Right. Yeah, they would have. They
would have had to change that whole thing. They would have had Danny telling the story, because in the
it could have been Danny.
In Turn of the Screw, the governess is actually the storyteller. Well, it's a guy who's reading the writing of the governess. So the governess wrote her like story of Bly Manor, and then they're at this other party, and this dude is like, "Hey, I have this story, this ghost story. So gather around and listen. It's written by this lady," and then he reads it, but it's written by her.
Maybe that's what they were originally going to do.
Maybe that's what they would have done, is like this guy's reading this story
and to then a group of people. It actually ends up being him. I could.
Yeah.
Because it almost is the same.
Then it would have been. Then it would have been the character who played Luke.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that would have been.
What they did better.
Yeah, I don't think it would have hit in the same way, though.
No, I don't think so.
Because either. I think they could have done it in a similar way because of, like, oh, they're playing off the memories, but I think the way that they did this, like, added to the memories.
Yeah.
And it added to the importance of what they were doing, you know, during the 80s and, like, this thing that wasn't as accepted, you know, that they're just like, fuck it, let's do it, you know?
Yeah, I think they made the right choice with that. So the last ghost that we haven't really talked about is the evil ghost, or I don't know if she's really evil.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say she's cursed. Evil.
I'd say she's cursed then.
Yeah, she's more of a cursed soul.
Right. Because her name is Viola. Viola something or other. I can't remember her last name. But back in like the 1700s or something, she was one of the owners of the manor along with her sister. And both of them had this love for this man who Viola ends up marrying. But then Viola gets sick. She has a child. And then she gets sick with what I would probably classify as cancer. I think it's supposed to be tuberculosis. Oh, okay. It might be tuberculosis.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be tuberculosis. Because they called it, like, I forget what they called it.
The lung.
The lung. Yeah, the lung.
They called it the lung. I think it's tuberculosis. So I just assumed it was
because
lung
she was
cancer.
Coughing up blood.
Oh, okay.
And that's usually a tuberculosis symptom.
That could be. The only reason I thought it was possibly cancer was because she had it for so freaking long.
Yeah, that's true. But she, like, fought it. Like, she just didn't want to die.
Right. Which, yeah. Tuberculosis definitely is possible. Because I think that's also a long-running disease as well. But the fact that no one else was catching it was also like, maybe it's cancer. But with her, she had such a strong will to live that she denounced saying her last rites, which she was apparently supposed to say this thing that a priest told her to say. So instead she dies and she stays within the manor, but she's actually she stays within her trunk. So she has this trunk that they lock up with all
she's attached
of her,
to like the dress,
right? Well, all of her belongings are in there. She's got a bunch of dresses. She's got a bunch of jewelry in there that is worth tons and tons of money. And her sister ends up getting together with her ex-husband, but her widowed husband.
Well, yeah, they weren't getting together before that. Well, they don't say if they were or not.
There was definitely some weird flirtatious stuff going on, and the sister liked the husband. But then what ends up happening is before she dies, she ends up living through this sickness for a few years. And it just becomes too long for the sister to wait.
Becomes a burden.
Yeah, she gets sick of waiting for her to die. And it's up in the air whether the sister just kind of gets sick of taking care of her or if she gets sick of seeing her sister like that. It's up in the air what she...
I think it's both.
Yeah, maybe
I think
it's
each... Yeah, I would say it's each thing because both... Like, when you see someone super sick like that and you have to see him every day, like, that's got to be hard. And then... when you're just, like, having to take care of them, you know,
right.
Like...
And they're not getting any better.
They're not getting any better.
They're acting like jerks.
They're fucking... Yeah, she's, like, violent and stuff, and... Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think she just came to a breaking point.
So she ends up murdering her, But before that happens, she tells Viola tells her husband, "Here are the keys. Here are the keys to my trunk, which contains all my valuables. Only give this to your daughter when she comes of age, or whatever."
Mm-hmm.
So her sister kills her, and then later on, they end up becoming really poor. The sister and the husband, because they kind of get together. I think they get married. Yeah, they get married. And then she convinces the husband to give her the keys, and she unlocks the trunk. And the just like they were going with the memories before with the other ghosts, Viola's memory was just she would wake up every day, and then she would grab a different dress. Because it was like as if she was in a different, she was in her trunk. So she would get her dress, she'd walk around, and then she'd go back to sleep. She'd get her dress, go back to sleep. And she was just waiting for her daughter to come and claim her belongings so that she could pass it down. But what happens is she finds out it's her sister who does it, and she... As a form of revenge, she chokes out her sister with the dress and ends up killing her sister. And then sort of as like a comeuppance for doing that, the daughter and the husband, even though they're poor, they are so distraught over the sister's death that they don't want to have anything to do with the belongings in the trunk, and they dump the trunk into the lake. And then that begins the haunting of Viola, because she keeps, all she remembers doing is she remembers that she wants to give something to her daughter, so she keeps leaving the lake and trying to find her daughter, who no longer is living at the manor, and then she goes back to sleep. So she's just stuck in this like loop. And if anyone gets in the way of her loop, she kills them. And that's her whole yeah. thing.
And well, she's also causing everyone to be stuck there.
Right.
Because her curse is so powerful that it holds everything. Because she holds on to she has like this grudge that she's holding on to so powerfully that it holds every spirit in there.
Right. Yeah. So just like we had mentioned before, this is one of those things that she just... She was a ghost that could never let go. That was her thing. Mm-hmm. She could never let go. And that inability to let go was so strong with her that it affects so that many other people.
Affected like Steve everybody said. There.
So yeah.
No, so, that's a good way to look at it, because like in her life, she couldn't let herself die.
Right.
Like she was just like, even though you looked at her and you're like, she should be dead.
Right.
And why would you want to live that way? She would not let herself die. And in death, she wouldn't let herself leave.
Right. Well, her whole thing was about denying death and not letting things go. She wouldn't let the manor go, right? She told her husband she would not obey him. Like, that's not a bad thing. But there was this love, honor, and obey, and she did not say she would obey.
Mm-hmm.
She was not about giving any of her power to anybody else. She didn't want to give anything up. And the only person she was willing to give anything up to was her daughter. But that was like her firm, like, I'm going to put my foot down. No one's going to get anything except for my daughter. And that's what kept her alive so long, was just that memory and that strong belief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was, she wanted to be carrying her daughter. Right. That's why if anyone got in her way, she's grabbing them.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yep. And she would choke them to death.
But she didn't really know what she was doing, because she was because as the ghosts progress, they lose like their face and stuff.
Right.
So they lose. I didn't read anything about what people's ideas are of why their faces go that way, but maybe it's just the over time what you're doing loses value.
No, they mention it. It's they just forget themselves. They forget they forget what they're doing. They forget. They just know their routine, right? They just know, like you had mentioned before, one of the interesting things about ghosts is that, or a lot of people's thoughts about ghosts, is that they're just a memory, they're an imprint on wherever they had lived. So she's just kind of living that imprint out over and over and over again. But
so it's kind of like disintegrating a little bit.
Right, she disintegrated. And that's why the other ones disintegrated too. Like they're following their same sort of memory path.
Yeah, you have like the doctor and the kid.
Yep.
And then her sister too at one point.
Yeah, her sister's up there in the attic. Yeah.
Flora's like, "Shut up."
Yeah. But that also plays in with the biggest mistake thing that I was talking about. You're reliving your memory of your biggest mistake. Her sister's biggest mistake was sitting there and opening the chest, even though she was told explicitly not to. So
I actually
I don't think her husband did end up giving her the keys. I think she took them.
She stole the key. Didn't want to give the key. He was like, that was his like final honor to his wife.
Yeah,
and he didn't give her the key, and then she's like, "We have no fucking money. We need to sell this shit." But he still didn't want to do it.
Yeah. So that Viola, and she as far as bad ghosts go, she wasn't really that bad of a ghost, but she did kill people, so I guess she was sort of bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, the killing of people, but I wouldn't necessarily like say that she was bad, like a bad person or anything, you know. Like, she's a human. She would, like, when they, and that's why I like this show and I like what they did with the ghosts, because, like, they're portrayed more as humans who have faults, you know, rather than as, like, oh, this person's a really bad person and that's why they're condemned to being a ghost, a violent ghost. It's like, no. And they make you think about it. It makes you think about it more, you know, because it's like, this is shit that people do. This stuff that happens to people all the time, you know, right. Like someone passes away in your family and maybe they don't want you to sell something that they own, but you do it because you need to, you know, and then you have Peter, you have all like just these people who are doing human things, you know, like Peter Quint stealing something. Maybe he didn't really want to steal stuff, but he felt like he had to, you know, like, and that's why it goes back to his mom. And then Miss Jessel knowing that Peter Quint wasn't the greatest guy to be going around with, but still doing it anyways, you know. And then Danny seeing her fiance, and Henry seeing, you know, hearing the phone call and having to find out that his brother and the woman that he loved died, you know.
Right,
so,
but having a little bit of joy in that—that's what it. The interesting thing about him was that he actually, the reason he didn't, he kept seeing himself with that smirk on his face was because he was actually sort of happy. and that scared the shit out of him. At least that's what I thought, because that's what the alter ego kept saying was like, the reason I'm here is because you're going to answer this call and Flora's going to be on that phone saying Florida residents or whatever, and it's gonna brighten up your day or whatever, because,
well, he brightened up his day because Flora's his daughter.
Right, no, I know Flora's his daughter,
but I don't think he was ever happy that his brother and wife died.
No, yeah, I don't think he was like super happy about that, but I think there was like a part of him that was, because he was losing everything. He was, his brother said, "You're out, you're losing everything, you're done. Like, you're never going to see your family again. You're losing it all. You're not going to see your daughter. It's done." So,
yeah,
I think part of him,
there was maybe there was like a relief, that evil, maybe there was like a relief, you know?
Right. And that's what I think his, the smiling, guy was all about, was that you had this relief, even though it was a bad thing that actually occurred. Mm-hmm. But maybe
that could be part of it. That could definitely be part of it.
Yeah,
I didn't really think about that too much until we just started talking about it. But I think that probably is part of it, because he would, like, not that you're going to be happy that people that you love died, but there would probably be some kind of relief, you know, that you're not going to be. That's not going to happen, you know, these certain stipulations that someone made, is that's not going to be your life now.
Right. And I think it was that reason that he felt so guilty, was because he had
that's true.
Feeling of relief. Yeah.
That would just make more sense to me. Because if you felt bad that, I mean, I think there was part of him that believed he caused the death.
Yeah.
He blamed because himself too. They were there because he slept with his brother's wife.
Right.
And Flora is actually his daughter. And he believes, because they went to patch up their marriage because of that. But I think you're right. I think the grief, more of the grief, is that he felt a relief and that he believes that he's bad for feeling that.
Right.
And that's what I think. He can't let that go, because he's like, I mean, I would, if I felt that way about someone dying, I wouldn't be able to let that feeling go either.
Oh, yeah.
You know? It'd be something that would haunt me for the rest of my life that I felt that way.
Right. That you're,
so I can definitely see that.
A little bit of satisfaction or a little bit of relief.
Yeah, that would definitely be a haunting fucking thing.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, I definitely can see that, and it makes me appreciate that even more.
Yeah.
Because that would be, I think that would be kind of a human reaction in a little bit of a way. And you're going to remember, like, even if it's the tiniest smidge of a thing that you feel, you're going to remember it because it's fucked up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You're going to be like, oh,
I can't believe I fucking brother. Felt that Jesus. Way. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I just think overall that this series was pretty well done. I think that, yeah, the critics might give it a lot of flack for some stupid reasons, but I think it's worth the watch. I think that like we said before, I think Hill House is just a little bit better, but I don't think it's like a ton better or anything like that.
No,
I think they're on the same level.
I think they're close to the same level. I think it's just what you appreciate more, like in a story. You know, I do think that for me, this one meanders a little bit more in certain stories. It, like, Hill House has more of a straight like movement, where this one kind of like strays off and goes into places where maybe it didn't need to go as far as it did.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, maybe they were stretching it a little bit.
There was some filler. There was a little
points.
Too much filler.
Yeah. And I think that's where it hinders. But I think if they didn't, like, I think, honestly, I think if they just were like, fuck that, we're going to make it like 7 episodes, it would have been really good. Like, because it would have just moved and take a lot of, like, the fat out and try to cut down certain things. I think it would have been amazing. But still, I think what they did, I really liked it. I think it's top tier, like, as far as television. If you want to watch it, if you want to watch a TV show, like, it's still in the top 1% of TV shows. Like, you're not going to find much stuff that's better than this.
Yeah, know? I agree. I think my least favorite part of the entire series was the last episode. Only because I felt it was a little bit drawn out. If it was like 30 minutes, I would have been fine with it, but I think that they drew it out just a little too long. Whereas if you think of Hill House and how they had their ending, it was almost like abrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Like they reveal pretty much everything to you. And you're like, oh my God, you're shocked. And then it pretty much ends.
Yeah. They kind of like stay on that one part, you know, where it's like, okay, when is, cause she's always like in that like moment of, I got this ghost inside of me and I know it's going to happen at some point. And you're
that
just like, they stay on that for a pretty long time,
way
you know,
too long.
Which is, I know, I understand why they did it, because it's like impactful. They were building the relationship between the gardener and her and Danny. So I understand, the gardener's name is Jamie.
Yeah.
But So I understand why they did it, but it just was, I think it was a little bit too long too. But I mean, if you're gonna make an episode, like they're making them an hour long, you know.
So it's just
like a standard thing. I don't know why it is. Like I wish that they just didn't care that much about stuff like that. Where it's like, hey man, if it's a half hour episode, that's what we got. Who cares? Sorry,
right?
You know, well,
I think they should have extended the previous episode like 20 minutes. Done. Just because. Like I said,
kept it at 8 episodes.
Yeah,
that's probably what they should have done.
And then with because like I said with Hill House, it, one of the reasons people I think like Hill House so much more is because the ending was just short, sweet, and to the point. It literally was, there was nothing drawn out, and it ended abruptly. And it also like I believe we've mentioned in previous podcasts. Some of the best endings are some that are left up to ambiguity. Like, you're mm-hmm. not 100% sure what happened. And that was, I think, a fault with this particular show, too, was that you knew everything that happened.
Yeah, they, like, showed her in the water and everything.
Right. They locked every single thing up.
I like the image that they showed, but I actually do think, I wish that they didn't show that. Like, right. I kind of, like you said, more ambiguous. I kind of wish, like, because I'm fine with them, like, oh, she comes back, and now it's, like, Henry's old, it's the kids, Flora's getting married, and, like, they go, and there's Owen, and there's, you know, Henry as an old man, and you see Miles older, and all that kind of stuff. I like that they did that. But it would have been nice. It would have been cooler if they like had someone question about like what happened, and then she just doesn't say, you know,
right
type of thing.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. I think they just could have done it better instead of wrapping it up in a bow and tying it and being like,
yeah,
here it was.
It was a neat bow, and I think a lot of people who watch stuff like a neat bow. I'm not as big on it. Like, I do like more ambiguous stuff. I like to leave and think about it a little bit more.
Same.
I mean, I think they left a lot to for people to think about in this whole series, though. Just we're talking about the ghosts and stuff. I think that they did a good job with that.
Yeah, I definitely think there was stuff to think about. I just don't think it was as much as Hill House. So
yeah,
but. People should watch it anyway. So last thing I want to talk about is just a couple other films that that sort of had a similar thing going on with it, with ghosts. Just how I just want to kind of go over how many different tropes that this kind of covered. Because when you look at different films, they usually cover only like one ghost trope or one idea. And I think there are just different pieces in different movies. So one of the ones I wanted to mention was A Tale of Two Sisters, which actually isn't a ghost story, but it makes you believe that it's a ghost story. But the thing that I think this relates to in Haunting of Bly Manor is Danny. So Danny has this hallucination, pretty much, of her husband, or her not husband, her fiance, dying after she tells him something. And in The Tale of Two Sisters, these ghosts are just a hallucination of one of the sisters, right? So in a way, it's similar. And if you look up Tale of Two Sisters, it's considered a ghost story, just like this is, even though it's actually only hallucinations.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And I would say watch Tale of Two Sisters because it's really good. It's actually, and it's scary. Like, if you want to be scared, it's a fucking scary movie. Like, there is a lot, the imagery in that movie is very creepy.
I think just the cinematography, if I remember correctly, made it very creepy feeling.
Oh, yeah. It was very eerie.
Yeah. Just like some of the shots that they had.
It's a lot of like slow moving stuff, yeah. You know, where,
which is
like, they don't really show a lot of like a scary thing, you know, it's more of like things are happening around and it makes it like you feel this like impending doom, You know, and I think that that's the scary, though, to me, that's the scariest type of horror. Like, when someone does that and they do it well, like, you don't even have to jump scare me. I don't even care about that. Like, if you can make me, like, just feel like something scary is going to happen, then that's what's scary to me.
Yeah.
I agree. Put me on edge, and then you don't. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of jump scares in general, because I think it's just a way to make people feel something without actually feeling it.
It's a cop out.
It's like a moment where, like, you feel scared because someone just went rah, but you're not, like, to me, I was never scared. You know, it's just a moment that made me scared, and then it's off. You know, if you can keep me, like, scared for a half hour and, like, shitting my pants, that's, you know, I think that that's an attribute of a really well done, like, segment of a horror film.
Yeah, and I think
and that's what this movie does. That's what A Tale of Two Sisters does.
Well, not only that, I think what it also does is it strongly plays with your emotions a bit, because mm-hmm. of the situation that is actually in the movie.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, and that's what makes it. To me, that's what puts people on edge, is when you're, like, emotionally invested.
When you're seeing a fucking bloody moving bag, like, that shit is, it's just, like, something that, it's something that, like, actually will physically hit you.
Right.
It's like, in Hereditary, like, when the daughter, her head pops off, that shit hits you physically. Not only is it scary, it's because someone's dying and they do it in such a gruesome way. It, like, makes you feel, because they've built this character, and the characters, you actually care for that character, because it's a good character. Charlie is a good character, you know?
Right.
So, like, when the head pops off, you're like, fuck!
Yeah. No, you're right. You wouldn't think of, like, if it was just a random person that they didn't build up at all, you wouldn't even feel that bad. You'd probably still have some shock value, but you wouldn't be like, what you said, fuck.
Yeah, and this has nothing to do with, like, ghosts or anything, but a movie that does that, like, physical, like, makes you feel like a pit in your stomach is Seven.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just for the way that they made the scenes play out, and, like, just looking at it, there's not a lot of, like, you don't actually see these things happening. It's the aftermath, and that, like, the aftermath is so freaking haunting. You know, and it, like, makes you physically feel something. Like, when I first watched that, it was like, there was, like, a fucking pit in my stomach the whole time I watched that.
Same. Yeah, it's very, I don't know. It's also very grotesque, too, I think.
That
aids in the creepiness, but.
And it feels real. The things that they did make feel, like, not that someone could do all of that, but, like, just the reality of that, of a scene, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Like, that could be a murder scene. Yeah. Like, someone could be so fucked up to do at least one of those things.
It feels real.
Yeah.
I think that's what makes a good horror movie, is when it makes you feel like it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
The other movie I wanted to mention was The Sixth Sense, and the only reason I wanted to mention that was because of Mrs. Gross, where she didn't realize she was a ghost. Bruce Willis, obviously, and arguably other ghosts in The Sixth Sense don't realize they're ghosts. And the one line I think I just wanted to mention from The Sixth Sense that kind of plays with Mrs. Gross's character pretty well is, they don't see each other. They only see what they want to see. They don't even know they're dead. So they only see what they want to see. And I think that's a big piece of her character, is she only wanted to see what she wanted to see. Just like I had mentioned before, she was strong into the denial of her husband leaving her. So she only wanted to see the good side of it. She wanted to see that her husband possibly was coming back. And she also never wanted to see that she was dead, so she kind of looked past it.
Yeah.
I think that's the similarity there with the Sixth Sense, because, as you know, Bruce Willis doesn't know he's dead, and in the end, you find out he is dead, but it's mostly because of his, in my opinion, it's because of his denial. mm-hmm. And his strong love for his wife, just like Mrs. Gross has a love for Owen and mm-hmm. her ex-husband. So
yeah.
So that's The Sixth Sense, and the last one is The Shining. And obviously The Shining has a lot of, some could argue like that there's some possession in there, that that Jack was actually possessed,
yeah,
but he could also have been a ghost, so there's a lot of ambiguity there. I would say The Shining did ghosts actually pretty differently than The Haunting of Bly Manor, just because they don't explain really anything in The Shining. They don't tell you.
Yeah, The Shining is,
explains everything.
Yeah, that's the difference, is The Shining is like super ambiguous about like what is going on.
Yeah.
They really, like, he could be just fucking insane, he could be possessed, he could be a ghost. You don't know. They show things that make you think certain ways, but there's no actual like telling you something, you know.
Right. All you know is that there are ghosts,
mm-hmm.
and that's about it. But you don't know why they're there, what happened, all that. So, yeah, I think that if you were to compare these two, this is where you see a lot of differences between how ghosts are actually done in certain films. And this one, it's a lot of ambiguity. And I think a lot of different movies have more ambiguous ghosts, of like where the ghosts are just like kind of there, and they're usually kind of evil, and
yeah, nobody really usually like tied to like a demon,
yeah, like Poltergeist, where they just built on top of an Indian burial ground or Native American burial ground. Yeah,
like if you watch Conjuring or something, you know, and the ghosts are usually tied to like some form of evil thing,
right? Which, I mean, those are entertaining. Obviously, The Shining is a very good movie. But at the same time, Shining's
a great movie.
Yeah,
it's one of the best fucking horror movies of all time,
no doubt. But sometimes it is pretty interesting to know a little bit more about the ghosts and stuff. And I think,
they're just doing things in a different way. You know, like Bly Manor is telling a whole story, and I would say, like, not that Bly Manor is not a piece of art. I would say there's between, like, if you're going to compare it to The Shining's more of an interpretive piece of art.
Right.
You know, like, where Bly Manor is more of, like, a story in an art form.
Right.
Like The Shining. Shining has a story, but it's not really the story that matters. It's, like, what's happening to the characters and stuff like that. Like, the story and The Shining actually doesn't really matter that much at all. It's right. Like, there really isn't much of a story. It's just people doing things and living in a place in a certain way, and what's happening to the, like, unfolding. There's no really like plot or anything. Like, it's just shit happens, and it's like, okay, let's deal with it.
Yeah, like, I actually,
this guy just like progressively gets crazier and crazier and crazier. There's no, like, you don't know why he's getting crazy. You don't know. I mean, the only thing you could say is like, oh, they're trapped in this fucking haunted place, and or, you know, whatever. Or he's just going stir crazy because they're trapped in this hotel and blah, 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 and he's losing his mind. So it's just like everything is ambiguous in that movie. There's right. No, like, you can't. I don't know. There's nothing that really holds together a whole story, I don't think, you know.
No, I agree. I agree with you. And just in general, I think that movie is trying to make you feel insane yourself. So
yeah, no, that's why that's why Kubrick did it that way. And I know, because he did something that Stephen King didn't like. Stephen King is known to hate that movie because Kubrick didn't tell a story like Stephen King likes to tell a story. Kubrick was like, fuck you, dude, this is how I tell a story. Everything's ambiguous. Like, if you watch any Kubrick film, they're all ambiguous.
Yeah,
everything. Like, even if you go back to like Full Metal Jacket and stuff like that, if you look at these movies that he's created, they're all like crazy ambiguous. There's no, like, there is like a message, but the messages are like up for your own interpretation.
Right.
Like people could watch Full Metal Jacket and be like, well, this is a good war movie, you know? And other people could watch it and go, dude, this is like a fucked up thing that these people are having to go to war and shit and what's happening to them mentally and shit. You know, like you can look at it. People can look at it in different ways.
Yeah. It's very interpretive,
but yeah, that could be a whole other episode of us talking about Kubrick's ambiguity.
True. Yeah. So a lot of different movies, a lot of different pieces of media use ghosts in very different ways. And like we said, Bly Manor just is a pretty good example of how ghosts are used. And I'm excited for what they do for the next haunting of whatever
manor.
I'm guessing it, so far they've taken from two old books. I like what they're doing a lot, actually. I like the idea of retelling these older ghost stories. And putting them to the screen, because I feel like if you were to compare one other type of show like this, which is American Horror Story, American Horror Story does this whole different thing, tries to do like more of like a modern look at everything. But I love the retellings of these stories. I like what the Haunting series is doing.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what selection of books they'll do next. There was a huge period of time that ghost stories were like huge, I feel like, and it's like maybe the 1800s or something.
There was the romantic era of literature, and I mean, you had Henry James, you had Edgar Allan Poe, there's another guy, shoot, I can't think of his name, but there's another like very prominent horror writer. Hawthorne. Nathaniel Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wrote a bunch of others like Scarlet Letter and stuff, but he also wrote like a ton of short ghost stories. So you had these figures in literature that were writing about ghosts.
Yep.
In that era, ghosts were romanticized because I think there was a lot of like thought of memory and thought of like what you didn't do and what you did do, because obviously during that time, what else do you have to do but dwell on your thoughts, you know, and dwell on the person that you are. Like if you read anything from Edgar Allan Poe, he's obviously dwelling on his thoughts all the time, because they're always about a single human and what the shit that they're going through, like, and how progressively it gets worse and worse over time.
Yeah, no, that's true. I'd be curious if anyone's going to do anything about Poe.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to, like you said, I like what they're doing with these haunting ofs, because I think what makes this stuff really good, too, is that they don't have to focus so much on making this, like, unique plot, you know? Like, I think a lot of things, like, these, like, it's cool to come up with a unique idea, but sometimes you don't need to come up with it. If you already have the plot in front of you, now you can become unique within this plot. Because I think writing a good plot is one of the hardest things to do, especially if you want to make it unique, because so many stories have been written that it's become so hard to be unique. So now when you dive back into these stories from the early 1900s and the late 1800s and stuff, you're telling stories that a lot of people haven't heard yet.
Right.
So now you're getting another unique perspective without having, and you can create unique characters within these worlds that are different. Like what they've done with both of these, they've created different characters in these worlds that are already there for them. And I think that that's a good way to do, especially, I don't know, for me, like the plot, I love to write, and the plot is always the hardest thing for me to come up with. And when I do, it's easier for me to write these like cool characters and get voices in my head of these people who are going to be in this world.
Yeah.
And I think that's why these worlds that they're creating are so good, because they're already there and they can explore them. These worlds that are already there. And
right. And they can build upon them.
And they can build upon it. They can go, oh, I have this. So when you write something Bly Manor, you have the idea of the house already. So you're looking at this house and you're building it and you're constructing it, and the idea is there. So now you can build inside of that and keep building and building without having to say, how are we going to make this house look this way and this way? It's already there for you.
Yeah. There's a structure. If you look a little bit deeper, just to kind of wrap it up here too, is if you look at the pieces of the turn of the screw, like you had mentioned earlier, they're very vague. It's a 100-page story. Mm-hmm. And what do you have, like 9 hours worth of content that they wrote? I mean, that's quite a bit for only a 100-page story. So what they did was they took the base of the plot and they just built upon it. Like, they, one of the key things was, there's, if you read about the turn of the screw, there's an uncle who is unnamed, but all you know about him is he hired the governess, right? And he also doesn't leave his office. That's all you know in that movie. And what they did was they took that character, unnamed uncle guy, in an office, and they built upon it, and they made a story for him. And I just love, I think it's just as creative to take that and build something out of that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, look, like, a lot of the best authors did it. Like, look at Shakespeare.
Right.
All of Shakespeare is, except for one story, everything that he wrote was actual pieces of history that he just created characters, different characters within these pieces of history.
Right.
And he made them do actions that are human and they feel real to us, you know?
Well, look at Indiana Jones, for instance. I mean, there's a movie that Spielberg took shot for shot from and made this film. Like,
yeah,
there's, if you watch, look for a comparison of Raiders in the Lost Ark and whatever the other previous film, just look for a comparison. There are shot for shot comparisons of the two. But all he did was he took it, he retold that story and built on it. And now you have one of the best, like, adventure movies ever to be made. Mm-hmm. Indiana Jones. So, it's just, you can take it, it's, I hate when people say it's a cop out to take retellings and build upon them, but just like Bly Manor did, that they built upon a story that already exists, and I hope they keep doing it. I hope they don't listen to the critics and say, oh, you use too much of Turn of the Screw or Taming of the Shrew or whatever. You built on it. So, I'm curious what they'll use next, and hopefully we'll see something good. They'll keep on this great streak.
Yeah, I would hope. I mean,
I think they will.
Every couple years, at least, I'd like to see, you know, a Haunting of come out on Halloween and be able to binge it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. And I think we're going to get it, and I think they're always going to be good, just like Fargo is usually pretty darn good.
Yeah.
So, cool. Well, thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and have a happy Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween, everyone.